Brady, Alan Brady, Alan Brady, Alan Brady, Alan Brady, Alan Brady, Alan Brady.
All right, it's Dave Plyer back with you on 720 WGN. A new one-hour special with two newly colorized back-to-back classic episodes of the beloved 1960s series, The Dick Van Dyke Show, will be broadcast on Friday, December 14th at 8 Central on CBS. Series creator, co-star, and comedy legend Carl Reiner personally selected the two episodes to showcase in his favorite, featuring Dick Van Dyke and Mary Tyler Moore. He's a regular on our program, and he joins us once again tonight. Happy holidays to you, Carl.
By the way, was WGN one of the first radio broadcasts, one of the first stations to broadcast in the country?
That is correct, sir.
Because I remember my father, who built the first radio, talked about WGN being the one he pulled out of the air.
Yeah.
It was one of the first. I remember that fondly.
Oh, yeah. It was 1924 that we started. We were a mutual broadcasting station for many, many years. Yeah. Yeah.
In 1924, I was 2 years old, and my father was building crystal sets and radios. And I remember we had a crystal set where we got static and music. And then a couple of years later, he built a radio with had to go to the garage to get a battery because we had gas light.
Well, that's what
WGN was the forerunner. That's what I remember. He told me, this is the only station we can get.
But I'll tell you, that's what you had to do. I mean, you didn't go down to the Target and buy yourself a radio. I mean, back then, it was a little more scarce to even get your hands on one. People built one.
My father, yes.
Yeah. And you have a new, don't you have a book you're working on right now called I Love Radio?
Yes, I have. The book is out now. It's called I Love. And where do you get it?
I Remember Radio.
I Remember Radio. It's my favorite book. It first of all, it looks wonderful. It opens with my father's picture where he's building the crystal set and the two radio.
That's
and
awesome.
It goes from there. Every radio show I heard as a kid, and we listened to. You know, it was bigger than television as far as we were concerned. We never didn't listen to something.
Yeah, and I believe you can get to your books and all your books, because they're fabulous, at randomcontent.com. I Remember Radio. So I love these shows in living color that CBS has been airing these past couple years, and you handpicked two new ones.
Yes, I did, because, first of all, they were from the heart. The first one was, and both of them were, you know, it came from the family. One of my kids, I think it was Robbie, said, "Where did I come from?"
Mm-hmm.
And thereupon that arose. And I remember very well, the sponsors said, "You can't do that." I says, "Yes, we can." I said, "You think about it." I said, "All we say is that you came from mommy or mommy's belly." But and I said, "Children only want to know as much as they ask. You don't give them any more." I looked up Dr. Spock and says, "That's absolutely right. You answer the question, and if they have another question, you answer it. If they don't have another question, let it be at that." And the sponsors were very upset. If I were...
Really?
If it were not the fact that it was one of my first shows, I might have quit on that, because I would say, this is it. I can't do this show if I can't be honest about things like this. I said, I'm doing service to America, because people who told their children they come from cabbages or stalks can now say, yeah, that's true, you must be a girlfriend.
But this was during the first season, so this was 1961, and I know you did these flashback episodes, because I love this series, Carl. I mean, I just love it. And there was an episode you did a few years later called That's My Boy that kind of continued this story when Richie was born and was brought home from the hospital.
Right. And that's another one the kids asked me, you know, tell me about that. It's, again, taken from life, but we mixed it up a little bit, and not mixed it up, but made it a little more palatable to everybody. And not palatable funny is what we made it. We was in the laundry truck, I think. He was taking it out. We didn't have that problem.
No, not at all. No. And then, you know, in Never Bathe on Sunday, which is another Dick Van Dyke classic, they were all classics, but this one specifically, they were going on a second honeymoon, and Laura's toe got caught in the bath spout. And I thought to myself, okay, this was in season four. How much could you really show of Mary in the tub? You showed a little bit, but that was pretty probably edgy for 1964.
When they finally could get the door open, they couldn't get the door open. So, and matter of fact, Mary said to me, you know, she said, I'm doing a radio show. You guys have a camera out there. I said, Mary, there's a you know funny line where he was going to bust the door down. She says, wait, don't do it. There's a mirror on the door. So I have a break into the tub. He says, well, cover yourself with a towel. She says, I can't reach the towel. He says, what have you got? She says, a washcloth. Do the best you can. He said, what the what? And so I said to Mary, I'm giving American males leave to imagine you naked in the tub. That's a big bonus for them. And she said, okay, I got it.
So I assume there are color pictures of the sets that from that era when you were actually in production. So there's probably pictures of what the Petri living room looked like and the office looked like at the Alan Brady show. But I have to assume they're taking a little bit of that and then adding some colors from that era to really create, because they're beautiful. The shows absolutely look beautiful.
Well, you know, the photographer who was working on the show did take some color photos just for the fun of it. And I think we played off those a couple, but a couple were imagined. I remember them as being pretty accurate. When I saw them, I said, that looks pretty accurate. The living room walls and a couple of the clothing was a little off, but it looked so good. I bought it, and I said, that's the way I would love the show to have been seen.
Yeah, sure. No, absolutely. Now, everyone's got to be asking this, because I ask myself every question every year when I see the next two episodes that are being colorized. And my question is the Alan Brady Show Presents Christmas episode on your list to eventually colorize?
No, I didn't think about it. I'm hoping that somebody says, let's colorize the whole series. I think we'll have a whole new raft of friends if they get a color version of this going across the board.
But I'll tell you, that episode, that single episode, that Christmas episode, is a tradition. Like, you know, my family does it, and I'm sure you know this, with all the Netflixes and Amazons and everything else, to sit down and watch a show as a family just doesn't happen as much anymore. And we've got our list of holiday, you know, Christmas specials and holiday specials that we do enjoy watching, and that one is a highlight. We absolutely love it. In fact, when I have it, this is honest to God's truth. I usually have a Christmas party every year, 100 people in the house. We have a piano in our front room. I pass out lyrics to I Am a Fine Musician, and I give people parts, and we sing it on the Christmas parties, a la the Dick Van Dyke Show.
I love that thing where they all peel off one after another. No, that was and there were two of them wearing the Christmas outfits and dancing together.
Yeah.
Dick and Mary. Yeah, it was a lovely, lovely show.
It was a lot of fun. You've talked to me before about the show having natural audience laughter, because so many times today when we're watching a sitcom, we're listening to laugh tracks and canned laughter, but they used actually the laughter from your show on other shows because it was so natural, and I find that very fascinating.
Yeah. You know, the very funny thing is I remember the guy who did the laugh. He used it. We had a guy named Charlie Douglas. He captured our laughs, but he also didn't add laughs to us, but we used them for this reason. When we cut a scene short, like we cut the last four or five lines of a scene, it would drop off. You would hear a boop. You know, so he smoothed it out by, you know, fading it out. That's all he did for us. But he said that he says our laughter was so real. He scrunched his own laugh track. He got rid of them and used the Van Dyke laugh track for putting laughs into one camera shows. And so, if I remember Barbara Bain, who was just a budding actress and used to come with her husband every week to watch the show. We were good friends. And her laugh was very strong, and she often sat in the same spot, and there was a microphone over. So I was saying, a lot of people are hearing Barbara Bain laughing at a show she never saw.
That's hysterical. That's awesome. That's awesome. That says a lot about the series, because it was that funny. You wrote an episode called The Life and Love of Joe Coogan, and you felt like that was one of the best shows you have ever written.
But, you know, I love Joe Coogan so much. He was a, it wasn't exactly, I mean, the end of it was a fiction, but Joe Coogan was real. I used the real name of my best friend in the Army, and he was an Irish gentleman who had the gift of gab, the way all great Irish people do, you know. And when I met him, I did a show, and I needed a, I was asked to write a show for in the Army, and I said, give me Joe to help me. And I said, Joe's a screw-up. He's a bad actor. I said, but he talks funny. Anyway, we wrote sketches together, and at the very end, we became friends, such good friends. When the war was over, he came to visit me every week, and he was one of these guys who talked funny, but he never did anything about it. I said, Joe, you got to start writing. You talk so funny. And he wrote a short story, The Life and Loves of Augie Smith, I think it was called. And he sent it to Collier's. He wrote it and sent it, and they called him and said they'd like to use it, and it'll give him $7.50 for it. I remember him telling me. He said, $7.50? I said to them, if you can't pay $10, I'm not going to sell it. He said, no, it's $750.
Yeah.
He took that money, put it into single dollar bills, and went back to his home where he lived with two other Coogan families in a double apartment building, and he threw $750 bills into the air. He said, take what you want.
That
was Joe. Anyway, Joe, and that was the first, and they told me that this is the first time since Ernest Hemingway that a first-time writer got published. Hemingway got 14 published before he ever wrote his books.
Wow.
Anyway, so, but Joe Coogan's story goes on, because after the war, I said, Joe, you gotta take yourself to college and do something. You're a good writer, and he wrote a wonderful novel. And ultimately, he became a professor of English at George Washington University in Washington.
That's very cool. Anyway. That's very cool. And there were we can go through a billion episodes. There was another one, because you talked about the new book, I Remember Radio. And I'm an old-time radio fan. You did a show on fading old-time radio stars. Edwin Carr, played by Richard Hayden, who was also in The Sound of Music. That episode really captured the heart of what radio entertainment was in the 30s and 40s, because no one else really documented it visually, you know, until this show.
You know, one of my favorite things ever is listening to the Rudy Valli show. He had the biggest radio show during the radio era. And one week he said he's going to have an impersonator next week. I couldn't wait. It was about 13 to 14. And the impersonator came on. It was Richard Hayden. And he says, I don't impersonate people. I only do fish or birds. What would you prefer? So the person said, a bird. Very well, I will now do for you the yellow-bellied sapsucker. He says, yeah. He makes a sound so high in pitch, it is inaudible to the human ear. Listen carefully. And then for 10 minutes, there was nothing on the air.
I wanted to give that pause, yeah.
The longer it stayed, the longer the laughter got. It seemed like 5 minutes, but I don't know how long it was, but we were screaming with laughter. And at the very end, he said, amazing, isn't it? when I did the Van Dyke show as a tribute to radio, I had Richard do that on the air.
Well, you had some pretty cool people on there. And, you know, and I think about this. The show was on 5 seasons, and I knew you kind of know, and Dick Van Dyke told me this in an interview just a little while ago, that you kind of knew that 5 years was going to be enough. Like, that was going to be it.
Well, we knew it in the fifth year, because what started to happen is we started to get close to saying we did that one already, a version of that. And everybody had flourished, and Mary wanted to go to Broadway Dick Van Dyke got a movie, you know, Mary Poppins, and everybody was on their way someplace. I started writing movies, so we knew that if we say there's an end to it, we'll go out big. If we're going to dribble off the end, you know, we'd start repeating ourselves. So we did, the last couple of shows were some of the best shows we did, the last three or four shows.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember those. I remember those. It aired from 61 to 66, finished in the Nielsen Top 10 three of the five seasons, 15 Primetime Emmy Awards, three for Dick, five for you, two for Mary. Many shows, and I know you know this too, don't last the test of time. Like when you watch them today from that era, they're very dated. These shows, 1,000%, 55 years later, totally stand up.
You know, one of the things I must say, I was very aware while I was doing the show that it was a show that had longevity to it because it was about human beings acting human, and we weren't inventing behavior. And so I said to myself and all the writers who followed me, I said, none of our shows is going to have any slang in it. We don't use the slang of the day. We don't use any politics of the day,
no,
or anything about, it's about today, and today and tomorrow will be the same as far as people reacting to each other. That's not going to change.
Right. That's totally true. Totally true. Can you believe now Dick, who's going to be 93 this week, is dancing in the new Mary Poppins Returns like it was 50 years ago? Does that surprise you?
He's a miracle. He's a miracle. You know, as a matter of fact, Steve Martin, who was a miracle in himself, genius category, and he was asked, or I don't know if he was asked, he maybe even volunteered it. He's the single most talented man in all of show business is Dick Van Dyke, hands down.
Yeah.
And I believe that. I've always said that. And he is unbelievable. What he can do to this day, he can still dance and sing and jump.
No.
He's amazing.
He's amazing. And you kind of document this. There was a HBO docuseries that you did that's now coming out on DVD. It's really the secret to living into your 90s. And a lot of your friends, and Norman Lear and Mel Brooks, and Dick and Betty White and so many others, I love this piece. It's called "If You're Not in the Obit, Eat Breakfast." It's absolutely phenomenal, and it's so motivating to people.
You know,
go ahead.
I must say that whole idea came from my manager nephew George Shapiro, who had an idea called Vital at 90, because he had a lot of clients that were old, and he went around the country getting interviews with people who were 90 years old. I gave him a couple, like Stan Harper, the world's greatest virtuoso on the harmonica, and he really was a virtuoso. He played with every major orchestra in the world, Vivaldi, Bach, Beethoven, and Raymond Oliveira, who was a portraitist in New York and did every major celebrity and generals. Anyway, it was for real.
That's amazing. I mean, it's such a great piece, and it's laugh out loud funny. So you can catch two newly colorized back to back classic episodes of the beloved 1960 series of Dick Van Dyke Show Friday, December 14th at 8 Central on CBS. All picked by Carl. Carl's docuseries, If You're Not in the Obit, Eat Breakfast, is coming out on DVD. The legendary Carl Reiner. Happy holidays to you, Carl. And again, I always love spending a little time with you. Great stories, as always, my friend.
I love talking about myself, and you make it easy for me. You sound like you mean what you say.
I absolutely do. What a thrill, first of all, to talk to you. So happy to see that you never stop working and continue to entertain us. Thanks again, Carl. I appreciate it, pal.
Thank you.
All right, it's 720 WGN.
Yeah, I always said you were the top comedian, Alan.
Shut up, Mel.
Yes, sir.